I've been to see Norman Hart of Harleston. He's a member of the Friends of Norfolk Dialect. I first asked him how his interest started.
My interest really grew from when I said to a young man in class, "Do you do that again, boy, you'll get wrong." And I realised he didn't understand a word of what I'd said. So as ever, we repeated it more slowly and more loudly, and he still didn't have a clue. And I suddenly realised just how much I still had dialect in my voice.
You're a Norfolk man?
I was born in the room where we're sitting, just to the right of where you're sitting. The only real time away was university study.
So what's got you interested in the Norfolk dialect then? Is it because it's disappearing?
No, it's because I was fascinated by the way I found myself speaking. Before I left to go to university, I thought what I did was normal and everybody spoke like that. At university, I bumped into lots of people from the West Country, and I noticed they had a pronounced accent and used words that didn't make sense to me. And it was from that I started to look at my own words, pronunciation, language. And when I heard that the Friends of Norfolk Dialect was being founded in 1999, I grabbed the opportunity and been involved ever since.
How many members have you got of this society?
At the moment, I don't know exactly. Our peak was 400. If you asked to give you a guesstimate, I would say nowadays it's probably 250 to 300.
That's quite good going, isn't it?
Well, I think so, for something that lots of people claim is dead.
So let's talk about vocabulary, the Norfolk vocabulary.
Okay. Dialect is not a separate language, it's a version of the language. So in English, for example, we have Standard English, which is what most of us speak a version of. We have Received English, which is the how, now, brown, cow, and they play a game called Goff. A lot of the words that are separate in Norfolk have disappeared because they belong to a way of life from yesteryear. But there are some that are still used. For example, we don't call a heron that come and pinch the fish out of your pond a heron. We call it a harncer. Now, you might wonder, why has this word remained? Now, the theory I have, and similar theory of Professor Peter Trudgill, who's our president and one of the world's leading sociolinguists, is that because we pronounce the little silver darling that you get out of the sea, the fish, a heron, if we talked about a heron being caught in the North Sea and a heron in your garden, you'd only have context to tell you whether you were talking, as I would say, about a bad or a fish. So that word has stayed. There are lots of other examples I could give you, and there's some that are different Norfolk to Suffolk. Like a snail can be a dodman, or it can be a hodmedod. A splinter in your finger can be a sliver, or it can be a shiver. And I can never remember which is Suffolk and which is Norfolk, because one of the secrets is, although we are Friends of Norfolk Dialect, there is no such thing as Norfolk dialect. There is an East Anglian dialect which varies from north to south and from east to west.
That's forgetting about Norwich.
Norwich is a totally separate dialect on its own. In fact, Professor Trudgill, who I spoke of, can trace his great-great-great-grandparents to a triangle of Norwich, Yarmouth and the Suffolk border, so he's really homebred, is an expert, and his first ever study on his way through his studies was the dialect of Norwich.
There's a rhythm to the speech of Norfolk dialect, isn't there?
And that's interesting. That's where Norfolk and Suffolk differ. Norfolk goes down at any end of any phrase or sentence and is accused of swallowing its words as a description, whereas Suffolk goes up at the end of a phrase or sentence and often pronounces things that we don't pronounce in Norfolk. So, for example, if you're sitting somewhere in Dennington, you would never say down. You'd say down, town, and you'd hear the W and the N. In Norfolk, you'd never hear either. Town, down, as an example. Other pronunciation is very similar between both counties. The one thing that we're famous for is yod dropping. You might say, what on earth is yod dropping? It's the double vowel sound you find in words that only have a single vowel, like few and due. And there I'm speaking standard English, because to me it's foo and do. And it's bootiful, and that's several vowels anyway. It's voo, it's computer, it's Tuesday. Whereas all of those in standard English would have a y sound. Tuesday, computer, tuna, as to our tuna. But we're not the only people who do that. The Americans do it as well. And they only do it after T, D, or an N. So an American would say few, but not due. They'd say do. And it's really lovely to have something that we do bigger and better than the Americans.
Why do you think the Norfolk and the Suffolk dialects came about?
It's absolutely natural, and the theoretically linguistic experts would tell you, if you suddenly start with 100,000 people speaking a standard language, variations would appear in different patches. Now, most of our language is Germanic in origin and has come across the North Sea, so much so that something I find absolutely fascinating is the Frisian Islanders off the coast of Holland and East Anglian fishermen both have a little piece of poetry. Now, I think perfectly intelligible one to the other. Bread, butter and green cheese is good English and good Fries. East Anglian fishermen's version. The Frisians, butter, brei, ein green cheese is good English. Ain't good Fries. Now, okay, my Frisian accent is not very good, but especially if you see them written down, they are so similar, it's not true. And the original language of around here was pushed westward. And as I said, you know, we have variations east to west, north to south, but they're things that have grown up since. And words have come in from other places. For example, a floor cloth in Norfolk is a dwile. Pure Dutch, except they pronounce it vile. But when I've shown that word to Dutch friends, they said, goodness gracious me. Even more interesting things like, well, the word for a sweet is cushy. You have a bag of cushies. That apparently came back with the Royal Norfolks, having been stationed somewhere in the middle or far east.
So they've picked it up out there.
And brought it back.
And brought it back.
Yeah. And up until the 30s, the man in the street in Norfolk had never travelled very far. With the coming of World War II, obviously they went all over the world, and as you know, the Norfolks were captured at Singapore and were in prison with the Japanese for a long while. One of the ways a Norfolk person checked whether they had met another Norfolk person, they'd say to somebody they suspected of being from Norfolk, hey, your fa got a dicky bar? And if the person was Norfolk, his reply was, yes, and he's looking for a dozy fool like you to ride him. Now, I'll translate that for anybody who needs it translated. Has your father got a donkey bar, which is just a form of word used for male friends, male connections? And the reply is, yes, and he's looking for a dozy fool like you to ride him. And that developed in the 30s and is still quoted as the way of checking whether somebody else is from Norfolk.
I always thought boar meant a boy when Norfolk said.
Well, it's pronounced in different ways. It's pronounced if it was B-U-H in places. It's pronounced if it was B-O-R in places. There are various theories, because with a female it's easy. The word is more. And more comes from morther. And morther is a female, usually a young one. But boar, there's huge disputes about the origin. Does it come from neighbour and abbreviated? Or does it come from brother, changed? Nobody actually knows the origin of boar, but it can be pronounced in places, buh. Buh. Are you right, buh? Are you right, boar? You could have both.
Now, your next title is grammar.
Grammar, yeah. We held some courses for teachers 10 years ago with a Heritage Lottery grant we had. And they were all what I would call as foreign teachers, i.e. they didn't originate from East Anglia. And they could never understand why their children were making what they saw as mistakes in grammar. And they thought it was laziness. Best example of all is in the third person singular, because we don't put the S on. He eat, he run, he say are correct grammar for Norfolk, not correct grammar for standard English. And there's a theory about how it came about. In 16th, 17th century Norwich, the population was just under 40,000, and 40% of them spoke either Flemish or French. So we talk about immigration these days. That pales into insignificance compared with 40% of a population being immigrant. And at the time, standard English had the ETH ending, runneth, eateth. But spreading down from the north was what we currently use. I eat, you eat, he eats, we eat, you eat, they eat. And these poor foreigners were trying to learn the English language, and somebody was tugging them on the shoulder and saying, you should say runneth. And the other one said, no, no, you should say eats. Or you should say runneth, run, runneth, runs, eateth, eats. And they were obviously puzzled by that. Now, one of the things about languages as they evolve, and language is always evolving, is that it always evolves to a simpler form. So the theory is, the reason why we don't put the S on the end of the third person singular is the Flemish and Huguenots in Norwich 300 and odd years ago found run simpler than runneth, couldn't understand the newfangled stuff needing an S in the third person singular. And I'm not saying this was consciously thought about, it just happened. And so they learned, I run, you run, he run. And we're still saying it today. How can plough come out of an O-U-G-H ending? But same ending is cough, O-U-G-H. How any foreigner can possibly cope, I do not know. And the thing is about our present spelling, supposedly, it's the way we pronounce things 200 to 300 years ago, and spelling hasn't caught up with pronunciation. Prior to the Victorians, several things were different. Each town had its own time, but the coming of the railways meant that had to be harmonised. And language was very separate. But one of the biggest people you can blame for standard English appearing, a good old Norfolk boy, Admiral Nelson. Regiments were usually locally based, and even if the officers were a bit toffee-nosed or whatever, they were of the patch. They knew how the people spoke. They could communicate clearly. So in the army of yesteryear, use dialect. But the Navy press ganged everybody in ports wherever they went, and they'd got to have a lingua franca, and that was a big force in 19th century England for common language.
Well, Norman, it's been fascinating how languages develop. Thanks for talking to me.
That's it from me, Dave Holland. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.